Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. My guest today is Nick Allen of the Scorecard Review, and we should just open this up right now because we've been trying to stop laughing, leading into the actual show. So we'll just continue that as we go. But we are in the midst of sifting through so many For Your Consideration screeners because it's that time of the year. It's the time of the year where all the studios come in and say, this is our best product. We want to be considered for the Critics Awards because they know that, you know, organizations like the Chicago Film Critics will, you know, have an open enough mind where we won't care about how much money is being spent on a campaign. We'll be looking at the quality of the work. At least that's what I like to believe.
They trust us in that regard. Exactly. Yes. There's got to be some people who still maintain that integrity, yes.
Yes, because we were the people, you know, last year that nominated Michael Shannon for Take Shelter and Michael Fassbender for Shame, both incredibly good choices for Best Actor, and they were both snubbed by the Oscars. So that's what I like to think. I feel like we have a certain power in having the just awards at the end of the year.
We do.
So,
a unique enthusiasm for Michael Fassbender's performance in Shame.
Yes. Well, anyways, going beyond that, I've invited Nick here. We have to discuss the films that we don't want to be submerged by the hype, by the huge, you know, usually Weinstein-oriented, or just, you know, not they're not the only culprits, but the people that just spend tons and tons of money on their campaigns.
Sure.
And just try to dwarf the last 10 or 11 months of, like, great things that we've seen. So let's get started on just a few titles. A few titles, a few names that we want highlighted at
sure.
the end of the year. So what was something that stuck out to
well,
you?
Well, we're not going in order or anything,
no,
right?
No,
okay,
no, no.
So as soon as you told me about this project, Matt, the first person I thought of that I know will get overlooked, but I think it's a really great performance, is Cody Horn, Magic Mike. That she gives a very strong, expressive performance in a kind of type that goes beyond just this type of being. In the movie, she plays kind of the sister of Alex Pettiford's hotshot new stripper character, and Cody Horn's character also kind of takes a liking to Channing Tatum, but also sees that Tatum's character, Magic Mike, is not really going to change as much. But she inspires sort of change, and it sounds very cliche, but the work that Soderbergh does with her in a couple sequences, especially one where she's watching him strip, is fantastic. It's so simple, but it's so telling of every kind of emotion and every opinion she's wrestling with about Mike and the moment itself. And then she has a great scene with Magic Mike at the end, where Channing Tatum is initially essentially interacting with his audience, saying, like, am I not my job? And Cody Horn has a great kind of reflection of the audience in that. I just think that was a really great performance. I know it's very specific, but we talked about Soderbergh earlier, and I swear this is not coming just from a Soderbergh love. I just think it's a really great performance. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, that has no chance of getting an Oscar or anything or awards recognition, but I will certainly be putting down a vote for Cody Horn for Magic Mike.
And this would be like a best supporting actress.
Best supporting
contender.
Actress,
that
definitely.
Would be that. Definitely. Yeah. Well, and Soderbergh's just a master at building great ensembles, and Tatum's performance was a revelation to a lot of people.
Yes.
on a comedic and dramatic level. And do you think that people like, you know, Cody, do you think they upped his game in a way?
They upped his game. I think they also gave the movie more credibility beyond types. I think she certainly made the drama of it, or the conflict of Mike trying to change or not change, much more personal and believable. It's not melodramatic when she does it.
Mm-hmm.
The story is kind of light, and it's, you know, kind of more about the meat, so to speak. But she makes it a little bit more urgent, I think. So I think it's really impressive.
That's an interesting choice. That is the first time I've heard her name in any sort of like awards mentioning.
It will be the last. And I swear I'm not being pretentious. It's just a great performance.
But see, that's great. That's the whole point of this thing. And actually, since you mentioned her, I have to mention a Best Supporting Actress contender that
sure.
I would be supporting in this, and that would be Rosemary DeWitt for the Lynn Shelton film Your Sister's Sister.
Oh, sure.
And I have to mention her because she stepped into this role in this film 3 days before they were shooting it, because the actress who was supposed to play the role dropped out for whatever scheduling reason. And this is just a testament to what independent film is all about. It's all about collaboration and just
sure.
kind of going with the flow.
Just gunning it.
And Rosemary DeWitt was in the middle of shooting. I guess it was the last season of the Diablo Cody show, United States of Terra. And so she just kind of had to rush from that role into a completely different type of role. This woman who, I guess, is, you know, quote unquote, a lesbian, but is a woman that the great thing about Lynn Shelton is that her characters never conform to any sort of like societal sexual boundaries.
Yes.
It's like everyone is kind of malleable in that way. And she plays this role so beautifully, and she's such she gets her character's like self-loathing and her passion her performance builds and builds and builds into just this sort of like volcanic eruption at the end that is just so beautiful, and it doesn't feel forced. And you're just looking at this woman and you're like, if she can do this after 3 days of preparation, she can do about anything. So she gets my vote. It's another film that I think will get submerged by all the other things.
I think it will get submerged, but I'm glad you referenced it, because I did find her character intriguing.
Yeah.
As you're saying, her not sticking to a definition of lesbian or anything.
Yeah.
And her motivations for what she does in the movie are very interesting as well.
Yeah.
And certainly elevate Your Sister beyond just a funny title.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And when she's like near tears at the end, she says, I'm a bad person. I mean, my God, that is acting at its best. Anyways, so is there anyone on the support? We went to supporting actors. Any supporting actors?
Well, actually, it's funny with supporting actors. That's what the Oscars do. They usually go to the first.
Yes, that's true.
So
we're just kind of going down. So now I have to go to best song.
Let me think. No, I don't think. I mean, I don't think so. Unless you have some other supporting actresses, I have some best actresses.
Sure. Let's go to that instead.
Another one that's probably we're talking about. Obviously, I mean, this whole show is about people going to get lost, and
yeah.
I think Anne Dowd's performance
Absolutely.
In Compliance is
going
to get lost.
I have Anne Dowd's name right here on my list too. Yeah,
is such an important anchor, I guess, to the crucial frustration of that movie. That is definitely polarizing to people, and I'm sure, you know, our listeners will either stop their car, get out, turn off the iPod, and throw it in the trash for us loving Compliance. But I know people who also love Compliance. I love Compliance. I think it's incredibly punk rock for a small indie. And her performance is just so crucial to the experience of
yes.
it and to making you believe the important emotions, the important mindset, I guess, that is driving it. And without it being phony, and without losing you either.
Mm-hmm.
So she has sincerity along with playing gullible, but incredibly gullible, but also at the same time incredibly sincere and tragic in a sense.
Yes.
But also no more different than you and I. So that was really incredible, and especially at the end too, when she has her final word.
Yeah.
It's really great. but just a great performance that is just as average, I guess, on the outside. She's just a manager at a fast food restaurant. But it's so telling, I guess, of what every person could be thinking or their impressions, you know.
Yes.
And kind of the scary feelings or the scary thoughts are about just what people really believe and what they would submit to.
Yeah.
So.
And if I've learned anything from filling out a multitude of online job applications, you know, when you have to go through the 500 questions of like, you know, are people generally good, agree or disagree? I mean, you see how some of these businesses, they require their workers to comply to whatever authority
wow.
is presented in front of them. And I feel like that is really the key to her performance. This is a woman who's learned to not question authority. So when she gets this call from this cop and she gets this, the most outrageous, the voice on the other line, who's a complete fraud, and we know that right from the beginning,
right.
but is asking her to do just increasingly outrageous things, she completely nails like the wary sort of just, you know, woman who just is trying to get through the daily grind.
Absolutely.
So beautifully. And that is why it works, because I feel like if you had an actress who you felt was just sort of more, you know, superficially portraying this, the whole thing would have collapsed. You wouldn't
sure.
have believed it. But this film, and you find out at the title card at the end, for people who don't walk out before the title card at the end, that this thing has happened all over the country. Mm-hmm. That events like this portrayed in the film happen all the time. And she's the key to why I think the whole thing really, really succeeds.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I agree.
That and Craig Zobel's incredibly ballsy
Oh, absolutely. Oh, and his screenplay, the cinematography.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of elements. I just feel like she was miscast, the whole thing
oh,
would
sure,
fall apart.
Sure.
Okay, we're talking best actress. I have to mention this other incredibly talented lady named Caitlin Scheel, who is a New York actress, and she's done many, many, many like micro-budget films. I think she did, I can't remember exactly how many she did over just the last year, but she's done so many. And so many of the films that she tends to do involve some sort of like a love triangle or like this sort of like unrequited love or some sort, you know, some sort of like mounting anxiety or jealousy, I suppose, that are going on in her character. She was in the Joe Swanberg film Silver Bullets, which I think that's when she first started to get a lot of attention from, like, IndieWire and, you know, places like that. But my favorite performance of hers was in this film called Green that opened at Facets for, like, a couple weeks. And she plays this woman who is basically moving to the country. You know, she's a city girl. She moves to the country with her boyfriend, and they meet this other girl. And it's only gradually, as this film progresses, just jealousy all of a sudden just materializes in this sort of like isolated environment. And it's like jealousy is almost like the monster in the film. So it's filmed like a horror movie, and yet it's more about the theme of jealousy is really the terror that is terrorizing everyone. And she is just so mesmerizing. She reminds me of a young Meryl Streep. She looks like a young Meryl Streep. I think she's going to be in many, many things. We're going to be hearing a lot more from her in the future. So even though it's a very, very small film, probably won't get acknowledge, I really feel like it does deserve some attention.
Do you think you'll be keeping that in mind when you're voting for your critics so forth?
Absolutely. Nice. Absolutely be, yeah.
You might have to write that one in, though, I think.
I think so. And that's fine. I'm sorry. So, some of the happiest votes are
absolutely
write-ins.
No, I definitely wish that the best.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to sound so smug when I had to write that in, but I just wanted to
I think I had to write in, like, Abbas Kiarostami for certified copy last year.
Oh, I didn't
year,
know
so
that. Jeez. Okay.
Okay, anyways. Best supporting actor. Can you think of anyone? Anyone that fits that category?
I think you're going to have to go first on this one.
Okay. Well, I think we mentioned before when we were talking before the recording, there is one gentleman who I guess he works for best actor or best supporting actor. I'm not sure. But his name is Tom Holland. He's a 16-year-old kid. And he's in this film called The Impossible by Juan Antonio Bayona, I believe.
I think it's Bayona.
I believe that's right. And he's only done one other film I've seen called The Orphanage, just this horror film. And one similarity I can see between that and this film, The Impossible, which is a fact-based film about a family that gets trapped in a horrible situation, horrible natural disaster, is he really is a master of pure cinema. I really feel like he's a visual storyteller. He tells the story visually, and he is a master at eliciting great performances out of his actors. I think this is the best work I've seen in years from Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor, who play the parents who are trapped in this mess. But Tom Holland, for me, who plays their oldest son, is really kind of the emotional center of the piece. And I think he really anchors it. And he has to step up and be the adult. And there's so many ways you could play that just on the nose, just sure. Cute little kid. You know, I'm helping everyone. And he totally gets the tragedy and the emotional velocity of it. So
he definitely is able to show that transition from boy to man while still being a boy's physical shape. I at least that's the sense I got, especially after people are trying to put things back together, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to help people put things back together. A very intriguing concept, I guess, for a movie, but also with Holland acting, and it's very real emotion, you know, and in general, I think it's just difficult with between child actors and more professional actors. But I know this kid played Billy Elliot, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
On
the stage. It was the Broadway or off-Broadway?
I think it's the Broadway one or something. I know he's been playing Billy Elliot for a while. But it basically just is able to keep you in the movie because he provides such real emotions. The movie does rely a lot on him for a lot of scenes. Like, because Naomi Watts becomes a supporting actress, so to speak, and Ian McGregor has bits and pieces. But Holland is able definitely to carry this entire movie that really sucks an audience in with these massive things. And then it relies on a kid's performance, on a kid's charisma and so forth. And he succeeds. And I think that itself is quite impressive.
Yes. So. And I think if there's one flaw in the film, and I love the film, it's one of my favorite films of the year, but I think if there is one flaw, it is that there is a film score that tries to up the emotion, which is completely unnecessary because the performances carry it. You really don't need anything accompanying those performances, but it's a lovely film, so be able to check it out.
Yeah.
And then if you want to go into, I mean, I get, what do you think he would be? Do you think Holland would be actor or supporting? What do you think?
I think they would try to go for a Craig McCracken supporting actor.
Probably, yeah.
Not to reference Craig McCracken from last year's Tree of Life.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
I think they would try to go for that. They would say, we can't, you know, do best actor, but maybe give him a chance at.
We just need an under we just need an under 18 Oscar, Nick. That's what we need. We need something, because that's the way you're going to get, you know, the girl from Beast of the Southern Wild. That's the way you're going to get everyone getting nominated. Right. That's the only way it's going to happen.
That's right.
So, yeah. But anyways, yeah. So I don't know. I guess we could go into best lead actor. Do you have a lead actor that you would want to mention?
Oh yeah, I do. This was not a movie that initially struck me when I first saw it, but because it's, you know, screener season, I got this in the mail and I watched it again, and I was just really impressed and surprised that I had missed out or had not gotten it before. But Jack Black and Bernie, I think, is a really interesting performance. I don't know if you're biting your tongue about it or not.
No, because it was actually because that one slipped my mind, but I just seen the screener a while. I forgot to add that to my
list. I definitely think right from the very beginning when he's doing this monologue about preserving the dead and preparing them for a funeral is just so incredible, incredible to watch.
Mm-hmm,
And it makes the movie is more than just Bernie. It's about this town. It's about this community. It's about the impressions of community. It's about people wanting to serve a community and what they do for a community, so to speak. Like, Bernie is so involved in things, but he is just such an interesting character that's brought to life by, it's an earnest performance by Jack Black. He doesn't play it up for a joke. He doesn't play it up for, there's so many different ways it could have been done, as you've been saying, other performances, especially with his lisp and so forth. I think it really could have been done more comically disastrous by other people. But throughout the entire movie, he plays it so earnestly. That's definitely the word I would use to describe it, but I just found it to be a really compelling performance, or really just interesting to watch, especially with Jack Black, who again, you know, people can write him off. I don't think he's one to write off, but he's certainly very talented.
And he can play into that comic persona that can get the big bucks, or can play to a certain broad, you know, tone.
Yeah.
And he's very skilled at that. But no, this is the best Jack Black performance I've seen since School of Rock, and both were by Richard Linklater.
Oh, wow.
And I feel like they are just ideal collaborators. And what a fascinating way to tell a story in Bernie, because it takes a true story.
Yes.
It melds real interviews with staged interviews about this insane crime that happened. And yet they find a way to get at sort of just the bittersweet weirdness about the certain personality type that's so agreeable it's dangerous.
Right. That's true. And then you believe with his performance that people would say, oh, I don't care if Bernie really did it. You know, I'm glad he did it, you know. So an interesting story, but certainly another crucial performance that Jack Black really delivers on. But again, I don't think we'll be remembered.
Exactly.
Next month.
And I think that one will get like maybe an Indie Spirit. I mean,
it did get cast for a Gotham. I think.
Oh,
Gotham,
nice.
I'm so nominated for best cast or something.
I think it did. I think that got something.
Ensemble
at Gotham.
Is the word.
Yes, and also his performance of 76 Trombones made me laugh so hard.
Oh, sure.
I had to go back and rewind and watch it again.
But he's not. But he's doing that with his pure energy.
Yeah.
Because Jack Black is such an energetic character, and people can write him off for being such a wackadoo, kind of bouncing off the walls and so forth, you know?
Yeah.
But with that, he channels it so well into Bernie. It's such a focused character, such an intriguing character.
Yeah.
And with 76 Trombones, it's that's a great sequence, but he's doing it so seriously at the same time.
Definitely. And one other actor I want to give a shout out to. His name is well, just, I have to say,
shout
just
out
one
to
other
my
guy.
Main man.
One other shout out here, exactly, to my main man, Mr. Tyler Ross. He did two performances this year. One was in Stephen Cohen's The Wise Kids, and the other was in Nathan Adloff's Native Margaret. And he played two gay characters. One was like right at the end of high school. One was at the beginning of college. You could say that they're similar characters, but I think they're also very different, very particular characterizations. And this actor, I just see this guy going, I see his career exploding in the next couple of years. I think he is just one of the most talented actors of his generation, and he brings such vulnerability. It's so hard to be vulnerable on camera, and he just seems to have just this gift for just being so present in every moment. And I just think both performances are great. Both films are great. I think Native Margaret's a great film. I think The Wise Kids, I mean, if there's any justice, The Wise Kids will get some sort of Best Picture nomination at some point. I don't know if it's going to happen.
Is it really that good? I mean,
it is that
good.
I'm
writing it down right now.
It's right there near the top of my top 10 at the moment. And it's okay. Stephen Cohen's The Wise Kids. It's this film It's set in a Southern Baptist church, and it's about these kids between high school and college that are trying to grapple with their identities. And it is just the most wonderfully, I don't even want to say even-handed, because it's not even like a political film or like a diatribe. It's just a wonderfully humanistic look at these people at completely different polar opposite sides of the, you know, social spectrum, political spectrum, and yet it has such empathy for every single person on screen. And I just feel like it is such a wonderful film in such divided times and brilliantly acted across the board. So
very nice.
Yeah.
I wrote it down.
Excellent.
I know you love that movie, so I wrote it down again.
It's wonderful. And is there a picture? Can you think of just like an overall picture you've seen that you want to get recognized in several categories or something that you've really loved?
Well, we can talk about this for 2 hours.
Okay.
I mean, Take This Waltz, Sarah Polley's second movie, I believe it is.
Second feature,
where she had a documentary recently. That, to me, was one of the first great movies I saw this year, and it stayed up there. All around performance-wise, screenplay, even the cinematography is really great. I don't know. I would say Take This Waltz is, if we're talking about just movies overall that have the full package, Take This Waltz is the full package, plus more, plus a little gift bag. Plus an emotional gift bag. It's really, I mean, if anything, I would definitely, I'm going to try to give a kudos for original screenplay. I think it's one of those movies that you can sell. I think they sell it like a sexy comedy or something. Mm-hmm. But it is.
And definite comedy because Seth Rogen is in it. So clearly his name speaks comedy. Yeah.
But he's so much more than that.
He is. Yeah.
Especially in a scene where he is allowed to have his own emotional free run, so to speak. I think he does a great job of really embodying that moment of denial, which we don't have to get into but or anything. But Michelle Williams' performance is really great. It starts off kind of rocky because it has, like, the movie in general has like a Garden State kind of vibe where this character is, she says she's afraid of being afraid, and she has these kind of twee characteristics. But then somehow that stuff gets cut away, and the rest of it becomes this movie about, to me, about kind of like about that loves the honeymoon period, and then the honeymoon's over, and then you're with somebody. I mean, this is, it's not true. I mean, it's up to you if it's true or not, but it's very impressionable in that idea about someone who's kind of addicted to the honeymoon happiness of a relationship, and can't get used to the idea that eventually you just kind of settle down, so to speak, and you do just kind of live quietly with somebody. I think that's just really fascinating story and done so well by Michelle Williams, but definitely from a very unique perspective and very telling and very wise perspective from Sarah Polley's original screenplay. And it certainly had me thinking. It was certainly very impressionable in very positive and negative ways for me. So Take This Waltz. One of the best movies of the year.
You know, and that was a brilliant summation. And I have to say, this film, I mean, you've had like months for this film to ruminate in your brain. I just saw the screener last night, the For Your Consideration screener, and it's so fresh in my mind. I still have Video Killed the Radio Star like echoing in
my ears.
That's
a great scene. That's a great scene. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Both scenes are great.
Both scenes, very telling.
Yes. And another clue to the movie's simple poetry, I suppose, without being on the nose. You know, but also being unique and impressionable, I'd say. I mean, that song kind of haunts the end of the movie, especially the sequence in which it's placed, and that it's rhyming with earlier. I think that's definitely a testament. There's also these great scenes where it refers back to places that had been seen earlier and in a different situation with Michelle Williams and her actor. I can't remember his name. I apologize. The guy. I'm so sorry. But he
Luke Kirby or something.
Yeah. Nice.
Was it Luke Kirby?
I believe so. Yeah.
It's probably something like that.
So no, because he starts off with kind of a really. Can you say D-bag on this podcast?
Oh yeah. Oh heck yes. Yes. Yes.
So he has a jerk. Excuse me.
Sure.
Character, but certainly. Makes him more complicated than that, and then they have he and Michelle Williams, have this really unique relationship that's also kind of regular for movies, but it's somehow unique with this movie. But I was going to talk babbling about the editing and the cinematography has great color in it as well for a movie that is so kind of emotionally grim. It has such beautiful bright colors.
Especially, I'm thinking of the like amusement park sequence, or when they're in like this car and all the spinning colors. And I'm thinking of you talking about, you know, Michelle Williams, her character's addiction to like the honeymoon part of a relationship. And there's a great scene where she's just kind of spinning and just loving it and loving it. And then it just cuts and the lights go up, and then it's just, and now we're just sitting here. And it just feels like a great symbol for that whole idea of just at some point the honeymoon period ends and you have to kind of figure out what's next.
And on top of that, there's a great sequence. It's a continuous take. It's many takes, obviously, but involving furniture, and it is so poetic because you don't take into account, I guess, what your furniture situation is with someone you live with, what that means about your relationship with them. But it certainly can take on a meaning itself.
Yeah.
And very powerful, but a beautiful sequence using "Take This Waltz" by Leonard Cohen. So finally, using the title song, but just one sequence where this is certainly where the movie proves that it is certainly a very impassioned piece of art that it comes from a very very personal place for Sarah Polley, and also someone who I imagine is just wise beyond her decades or something. I mean, it was away
she
from
is,
her.
Yes,
well.
the first film she did was Away From Her, which was about an elderly couple and about the woman having Alzheimer's and the man, you know, helping her. And this similar type of film out that with Michael Haneke's Amour that's coming out. This is a similar kind of theme. But I mean, that was just an astonishing film about old people. I mean, you think like, you know, someone in their 60s directed it or something, and she has just such wisdom about human relationships, about what keeps people together, what repels them. And the crucial thing why I think Take This Waltz is so successful is that you have to empathize with Michelle Williams. You have to see the world through her eyes. You can't just judge her, although you can think about, you know, the overarching themes, but you have to go through it with her. And there is a monologue that I think Luke Kirby, you know, the gentleman caller, or, you know, if you will.
Gentleman caller.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
Very good.
Gives her, that is probably one of the most like erotic, sustained pieces of dialogue in like recent movie history.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
In the diner, and her reaction to it, bursting out in laughter.
Yeah.
It's a great film. Yeah, people should definitely check that out in the later part of the year. Definitely.
I think it's on DVD now. So.
Yes, I think so.
I'll
list that, you know, wherever I post this, I'll list the release dates.
I think
for these
it's
movies.
Smart, sexy, and stylish is what it says in the DVD cover or something.
Lovely, lovely. Well, check it out. Check it out, folks. That'll be awesome. And I want to thank you so much, Nick, for taking
thank
the time.
You very much.
There's so many great films to look at. And hopefully some of these names will get some kind of recognition
Absolutely.
At the end of the year. So.
Absolutely.
And for all of your reviews, you can check out thescorecardreview.com. That's right.
Yes.
And for all my recent reviews and interviews, check out hollywoodchicago.com and indie-outlook.com. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.